I'm Al Stoller. This is Soundings, and with me on the phone is Dr. Arjun Makhijani. Arjun is president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research and author of the book Carbon Free and Nuclear Free, A Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. Arjun and I discussed the book when it came out several years ago, and there's enough in it that we can discuss it several more times. Arjun, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Al.
One of the things you write about in the book that intrigues me is the concept of V2G, vehicle to grid. If we have a fleet of electric vehicles running on the highways and parked in garages at night or at other times, that is a lot of battery capacity. And one of the things about solar, about wind, about any sort of electrical is that it's very hard to store. The model upon which our electricity system is based is that electricity is produced as it's needed. It's used as it's produced. Very, very little of it is stored. But if we have all these batteries, well, what are we talking about as far as the amount of battery capacity we might have versus how much energy we use?
Well, you know, currently the automobiles in this country, in the United States, have far more, 10 times or larger, the installed capacity in their engines than the electric grid. That may seem surprising because the electric grid is absolutely huge, but the cars are sitting idle most of the time. You know, if we ran them as much as we run the electric power plants, we'd be paying much higher fuel bills for gasoline and diesel. But most of the time, personal vehicles are parked about 95% of the time. We use them about 5% of the time. And since they have a very large amount of installed capacity in terms of the engine horsepower, if they were electric, you could tap into those batteries, charge them, or use the energy stored there for the grid, depending on the needs of the grid and how much energy you require for your next trip. So it'd be a transaction between you and the grid. That's why it's called vehicle to grid.
One of the things that you'd have to think about is that batteries don't last forever. But the batteries that are in the Prius, for instance, right now, seem to be lasting quite long.
That's right. The battery life depends a great deal on how it is used. Battery life is longer if the number of times it is discharged is not very deep. If you charge it up fully and then discharge it totally, and then charge it up again or discharge it nearly totally, you're going to get a shorter life than if you use 25% of the charge. The way hybrid vehicles are designed is typically not to have deep discharges. Now, if we have an all-electric car, of course, you know, we don't fill up our tanks when it's three-quarters full. We fill up our tanks when it's a quarter full. At least that's more or less what I do. Different people have different habits. So it could shorten the life of the battery. However, if what the transactions with the grid are in a small range around the battery capacity, you know, plus or minus 15% of the battery capacity, it should not have as much of an impact. Of course, the grid will pay you for connecting your car to the battery and allowing it to be charged and discharged at the convenience of others. Of course, you would have to put a limit on how much the grid could discharge your battery, but within that parameter, you'd actually get paid for parking your car somewhere and lending it to the grid, which will reduce the cost of cars and, in fact, could totally offset the cost of fuel.
Now, there could be other ways of storing energy.
I've looked at energy storage quite a bit, you know, because in carbon-free, nuclear-free, if you're advocating solar and wind, there are two big issues. One is cost, and the other is, what are you going to do when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine? So there are many different storage technologies. One of them is actually very common. We have hydropower. Hydropower reservoirs have lots of water in them stored at a certain height above the turbines, and that's mechanical energy storage. It's gravity energy storage. So when you run the water through the pipe, now you could pump back the water once you've generated electricity back into the reservoir when you have surplus wind or solar.
We do that here in California. There are
That's right.
A couple
pump
of places.
Storage. And currently pump storage is mainly used when you have cheaper electricity at night and low demand, and you use that to pump water back into pump storage and then use the water at peak times. But you could also use it with renewable energy. So that's a common, available, and pretty economical storage technology. Of course, pump storage is not available everywhere, and we don't want to be building large new dams. But we can use what we have with renewable energy.
Let's just, before we drop that one,
sure.
It is interesting in that you're certainly not saving energy. What you're taking advantage of there is your capital. You're taking advantage of the fact that you've got the power plant. It's not being used at night, and it would be used during the day if you had the water. So at night, you pump the water back up, so you're still using energy coming from other power plants.
Right. Now, whenever you store energy, the one advantage of generating at the time of use, you lose some energy in the transmission and distribution, but that's it. You always lose some energy when you use it to store in a battery and then when you discharge the battery. So there are two energy losses. Batteries are pretty good. You can get round-trip efficiency of 85-90%. So you lose 10% maybe of the energy. Hydropower is also pretty good. You can get round-trip efficiencies of around 90%, provided you're not storing it for very long periods of time, because you could get evaporation if you store it for long periods of time. Other methods of storage are less efficient.
How about compressed air? That's always intrigued me, partly because you could conceivably put a very heavy-duty storage tank in your car and run your car off compressed air.
Yes. Now, people have run cars off compressed air. You know, compressed air as an energy storage mechanism is very familiar when you go to your garage and when they take the nuts off of your tires to change the tires, they use a compressed air machine to do the job. So definitely you can use compressed air to turn things, and you can use them to turn the wheels of your car, and people have suggested that. The trouble is its energy density is not very good. The amount of energy you can store is small, relatively speaking, and you lose a fair amount of energy in the round trip, much more than with batteries. I don't have the number off the top of my head right now, but I do know large-scale compressed air storage is used with electric power plants in two places, in Alabama and in Germany, and they're the, for the same purposes we use pump storage. Compressed air is stored in large underground caverns, and then you reheat the air when you bring it out of storage with natural gas, and you drive a turbine with the hot air. And the round-trip efficiency of that is about 65-70%.
Let me define just a little bit of jargon you just used, which is energy density, because that is super important. And what you have there is the amount of mass, in other words, weight, it takes to store amount of energy. With our very familiar lead-acid batteries, your ordinary car battery, obviously those things are really heavy versus your lithium-ion batteries. The reason they're so exciting is that lithium is the lightest metal there is. So lithium ions, for the amount of energy, they're very, very lightweight.
Exactly. That's one reason that, lead-acid batteries are not so good for electric cars, although lead-acid batteries are much cheaper than lithium-ion batteries. We can get technical lithium-ion batteries today. The kinds that are used in electric cars have energy densities of 150 watt-hours per kilogram. Kilogram is about 2 pounds. So it would take about 15 pounds to store a kilowatt hour. You can go about 4 miles on a kilowatt hour.
Note that a kilowatt hour is like if you have an ordinary electric heater, that's probably putting out about a kilowatt. Run
that's
it for
right.
an hour, you've got a kilowatt hour.
That's right. But if you want a range of 200, 250 miles, like say that Tesla gets, then you need you need about 50 kilowatt hours of storage. And so 50 times, you're talking a battery that's approaching 1,000 pounds. And so that's a large part of the weight of the car. And one of the main jobs that needs to be done with electric cars is to increase the energy density. We can approach 250 or 300 watt hours per kilogram at reasonable cost, then electric cars would displace gasoline vehicles very, very rapidly. This is a fearless, not a prediction, But, you know, a lot of people say we're running out of oil and oil will be very expensive and so on. We haven't thought about the other thing, that if battery performance improves by a factor of two and the cost declines by a factor of two, that's not very much. I think within a few years, it will revolutionize the motor vehicle marketplace, and oil prices would not be able to hold steady at high levels as they are today.
And it also shows, though, why fossil fuels are so valuable, because if you just think about how much energy you're putting into your car when you go to the gas station and fill up and look at it in kilowatt hours per second or per minute that you're putting into your car, it is a phenomenal amount of energy.
It is a huge amount of energy. If you have a 15-gallon tank, you're talking about 2 million BTU of energy in your car. It's a huge, huge amount of energy. A BTU can heat a pound of water by 1 degree Fahrenheit. We're talking 2 million BTUs. You could heat 2 million pounds of water by 1 degree with a gasoline in your tank.
Or a few pounds of water very, very hot.
So yes,
tremendous energy. We only have another minute or so. One of the big problems with wind, and as I say, we only have another minute, wind and solar are intermittent. They cannot produce 24/7. The wind stops and starts, goes fast, goes slow. The sun goes up, goes down. V2G, vehicle to grid, could possibly tide us over during periods when we're not producing energy. Is there any generic way we can get around that, though? Maybe by putting wind farms all over the place, solar all over the place, and tie it all together?
So there are many ways to address variability. I've been researching the wind here in Maryland, where I live, and it turns out that wind offshore is much stronger in the winter. And, of course, solar is much better in the summer. So if you marry offshore wind here in Maryland with solar technology, solar photovoltaics, then you're going to have much reduced storage requirements.
And putting wind offshore, it's much closer to the population centers.
Much closer,
than
right.
Than putting it in the Midwest.
More difficult in California because your offshore waters are so deep, so rapidly off the coast. Now, the other way to do it is, of course, to have solar in different places and have a national grid, have wind in different places. So if we had a national grid, we could take advantage of the fact that the sun rises and sets at different times in different parts of the country, and also wind is blowing more or less at different places at in different times. So we could take advantage of the diversity in renewable supply. There are many ways. There's no silver bullet, as they say, but I'm convinced by a combination of methods that the problem of variability can be resolved at reasonable cost. We have the technologies. We need to develop them to some extent. We don't need storage for a while because our penetration of renewables is quite low, but we can get the job done in 25 years if we really try to be completely renewable.
Arjun, thanks again for joining us. I hope you can join me again in 2 weeks.
Thanks. I will do so.
I've been speaking with Dr. Arjun Makhijani. He is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He's also the author of Carbon Free and Nuclear Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. I'm Al Stoller. This has been Soundings on KVMR-FM, Nevada City.